Hello, welcome back, y'all. This is To Be Determined with Devin Cunningham, and that's still me. I know we've taken a break. People have wondered. People have asked. You know, a couple people. Am I still doing this thing? Well, yes, obviously. I'm here. You're listening to it. I hope everybody had a Merry Christmas. I hope everyone had or is having a Happy New Year so far, or had a safe time celebrating it. I know it gets a little crazy. Got a little crazy at my church. We always have a watch night service, and we had to. It's usually filled with wonderful activities, like we always do communion, which you know I love. You know, look forward to it, and then we usually have a foot washing service. But we didn't this year. Usually, New Year's watch night service, you gotta come prayed up for communion and pedicured for the foot washing. But you know what? It was, we didn't have foot washing this year, as I've previously stated, so we had to fill that time. That's a good hour of time that we had, that they didn't just cut, they had to fill in. So we... We're kind of shooting from the hip to fill that time, and at least the music department was. And man, we got through it. We had a great time, and it was good to see our pastor there. Brother Mooney had just had that minor surgery to put in that heart cath, and he was looking great, sounded great. He got up and talked for a little bit. It was so good to hear him and see him, and just keep my pastor in your prayers, and surely appreciate that. I would like to just say thank you to everybody who came out to the Nest this past concert that we had in December. It was fantastic. We had a fantastic time just with the Chandlers, and I got up and made a little bit of noise, and even Dr. Anderson got up there, played a little bit, and we got Donnie Cunningham, the original DC, led some Christmas carols. It was just a great time, and it was a fantastic crowd. I couldn't get over it, and it just did my heart good to see everybody there, and I believe everybody was blessed that came and attended. So I just want to say thank you. And if you would like to see more of these concerts happen, now we're probably not going to do any through, we don't have any in January, or we're not going to have one in February, but we may pick back up in April. If you all are interested in seeing that happen and you live in the Indianapolis area, then give the Nest a call and let them know. You're going to want to give a call at 317-883-7285 and tell Christy you want more concerts at the Nest and that you really enjoyed the ones that we've had. We're going to have... If we keep this thing going, we'll have some new faces, and we'll bring back some favorites from this past year. Some other announcements for this year that are coming up. Around the springtime, of course, you all know that Master's Legacy Quartet, that yours truly is involved with, is going into the studio. We're all going into the studio this upcoming April, I believe, to record our first project. I believe this is the first project that this group has recorded. And I am so excited. I am arranging the vocals for it, and we're putting that together. And it's just going to... I really feel like the material's going to be enjoyed by... can be enjoyed by everybody, and it's going to minister. But, of course, that's going to take not just practice, but prayer and God's anointing, most of all. So I'm asking you all to please keep this project in your prayers, and you can keep track of all that's going on. You can follow us and on, I believe, Facebook, and of course visit the website at themasterslegacyquartet.com. Also, another project that's coming up, CT Legacy. You know, I want to make this clear. When I formed Legacy at Calvary Tabernacle, that was before I was even aware of Master's Legacy or was even asked to join. So, just coincidence there. But CT Legacy is going into the process. We are also beginning our rehearsals and preparation for our own EP. We are very excited. It's still in the early stages. Like I said, we're just beginning rehearsals, And then later this year, in the summertime, just be on the lookout. We'll be going on tour, hopefully to nothing extensive, just a little bit here and there to promote the EP. And we're looking forward to being with anybody that will have us. early stages. And then I am doing a solo project this year. I'm very excited about this. It is going to include a couple covers, but mostly originals. And I'm not to sound arrogant at all. It is just, I'm very excited because I feel a sense of urgency about these songs, and I really feel that they are going to minister at least to somebody. I mean, I don't worry about it going national or anything of that caliber, but just that one song could minister to one person, I believe that's worth all the effort. So I'm very excited about these projects coming up. And then, of course, in February, Aqua will be touring in Florida. I'll get those dates to you later. That's, of course, Aqua is myself and Brother James Larson, Timothy C. Spell, Karen Harding, Hugh McClellan, and the man Chris Higginbottom. It's a Southern Gospel ensemble. We just have a lot of fun, and we come to worship the Lord. And I got to tell you, y'all, I went to my first Crab Family concert just this past weekend, and they were fantastic. I've never seen any of them live. I've heard audio of live performances, seen video, but I've never been in the facility when they've all been singing or any. I don't think I've seen any of them. I've never even gotten to see Aaron or Adam with the vocal band yet, which, you know, shame on me. But I gotta say, they were fantastic. The concert was incredible, and I really appreciated their how real they were. It was just the worship wasn't contrived. It was all very genuine. It's the best way to describe it. And it was a great experience and a good concert. Went a bit long, but I tell you what, if it's good, it helps a little. But wow, it did go a long way. But if you're in the area around this tour, I highly recommend you to check it out. They did have a lot of opening acts, which I don't think that's going to be the case for every venue. So check it out. It's the Encore Tour, Crab Family Encore Tour. Go to any of the members' websites and you can find out dates. So if they're coming to you, you're going to want to check them out. I'm sure you're heard about it long before you've listened to this podcast. But yes, highly recommend it. It was a great experience. All right, my guest today is Brandon Graham. He is just a fantastic, just real nice individual. I've known Brandon for a number of years, and I tell you what, he hasn't gone downhill. He hasn't lost any points. He's only gained points. So good on him. He is a great worship leader and a good preacher. Sorry, he keeps telling me. And I'm joking. I haven't heard him preach, but I have heard he's a good preacher. And just Brandon and I are good friends. Now I got to tell you straight off the bat, we do tease each other a lot in this interview. That's because we are good friends. But I really do appreciate Brandon, and he has an incredible testimony. And I am so thrilled that he took some time to be with us today. So without further ado, buckle up. Let's get to it.
Music office at Calvary.
Yeah, it was in the music office. I pretty much use any room that I can. It's like, is there anybody in here? Is it not cold enough to be a meat locker? Okay, we can use this.
Is there a homeless man sleeping in the corner?
Is there a homeless person in the corner? I mean, that leaves under the platform off limits.
Can't go under there.
Brandon, thanks for being on the podcast.
No problem. Thanks for having me.
Jordan, thanks for being in the room. So yeah, thanks for that T-bone steak. That was killer.
Now's my time to tell you that's been sitting in the fridge since June.
Disgusting.
I'm joking.
Are you for real?
No, I got it back in December, November.
Okay, that's a little bit better.
But they've been, like,
it's not super fresh.
No. No, but...
Did you ask when it was slaughtered?
No, Dad just brings me free meat. And so
your dad brings you free meat? Is he a butcher?
No, so my mom works...
Is your mother a baker?
They decided to start a family business. No, my mom works for the College of Agricultural Sciences in Carbondale, Illinois.
Nice. So they bribe her for good numbers with meat.
She has students that own their parents own farms, so they'll sell us meat at discounts.
Nice.
So they go get half a cow and half a pig every year. So I'm, you know, when you have four kids at once and you're a family of six, back in the day it was a big thing. Now it's like three people live at home and the rest of us are spread out across America, so...
Let's talk about that. So, how old are you first, Brandon?
Jordan and I are 23.
All of you are 23.
All of us are 23. Yeah, Jordan's 30 seconds older than me, so...
Wait, so, like, within the four, because you're one of...
Quadruplets. Yeah.
Wow, your parents are troopers for raising you.
My dad's favorite joke is he always tells people, you know, I have four boys, all with the same woman. And I'll say, Dad, you can't say that. And he goes, you have to specify nowadays.
That's a sign of the time. So all of you are 23. So, like, within the four, you said Jordan's 30 seconds.
30 seconds older.
30 seconds older. And so you're the third oldest?
I'm third. So it goes Nolan,
Jordan,
then me, and then Denton.
And then Denton.
Denton.
What a name. Denton.
I know. All of us have to
very
have that.
Very phonetic. Denton.
Those O-N endings.
Really?
Yeah.
Was that intentional?
I don't think so.
It just kind of...
I was the first name because I'm the favorite, but that's...
Okay.
It's in the phone and everything. I changed my mom's phone and everything for it.
Oh, so you went ahead and...
Oh, I just did it.
Just classified yourself.
Yeah. You gotta start somewhere.
You do.
But no...
Which is a lesson for all the kids listening. Insecurities are gross.
Just be yourself. You're cocky. Be yourself.
Just be the favorite. One of four quadruplets.
Yeah.
Before we get into your own thing, what was that like growing up? Because... I know, it just, that blows my, I'm oldest of four, but there's a 7-year difference between me and the next oldest, so
yeah.
I can't even compare, you know, what you all did. How did your parents keep their sanity?
So, number one, we were born in St. Louis, and back in, my mom had issues getting pregnant, so she took some medicine, or she was on some treatments, which usually guaranteed multiples.
Oh, wow.
It still
so they
does,
knew that going
well,
in.
Well, they knew they had a chance at getting two. The percentage was pretty high for at least two. Quadruplets was still like one in, you know, 900,000 or something like that. Close to 1,000,000% chance. It's like, I mean, I have a better chance at winning the lottery than having quadruplets.
That's great.
But no, so they had issues getting pregnant, and so when they had us, obviously nobody in southern Illinois knows how to deliver quadruplets. I mean, some hospitals don't even know how to deliver children down there. So they had to go to St. Louis, which was the next major city to us, and we were on all these news stations because it was still a big deal, especially in 1994.
Yeah.
And so they interviewed my dad, and they said, what are you most fearful of when you get older? And he goes, oh, well, you know, man of many words, says they'll probably, you know, share each other's girlfriends and stuff like that. This is on national, like, on television in St. Louis, Missouri. And we, you know, it's home videos, we're watching it, and I said, Dad, you just made us sound like the craziest tick family on earth. They're just thinking, these people from southern Illinois are just going to, you know, have their kids, and they're just going to bring all their girlfriends, and you want this girl for the week, you want this, like, let's just switch girlfriends.
No,
you want to take her on a date? You want to take her on a date? You can cut this out.
Well, no, I won't. So I guess everybody wants to know, did that happen?
No.
No, it didn't.
No,
I know.
No.
But that's funny that he would say that. So you all get your sense of humor from your father, you believe?
Yes.
Or is it a mix?
Dad is definitely the one that has my dad is both my parents are people, great with people.
Yeah.
But my dad is definitely the more outgoing one. So my dad always said, I could walk into, he's like, I could walk into a family reunion at your mom's family and not know anybody in the room, and I'll just sit down and start talking.
So in some situations, crazy people do that too.
But you know what? It works.
Well, yeah. Hopefully.
People either will talk to you and they'll form your opinion of you, and then they'll walk out and they'll say, either that guy was really interesting or kids hide.
But he just, he talks to somebody. He doesn't exactly. just walk into the room and...
start talking. Yeah. No. No, he knows how to connect. He was very good at connecting with people. And then my mom, she's social, but it's one of those where she has to kind of examine the room, get to know the person in the room a little bit, sit and... digest the conversation, if it's interesting enough to jump into, or if it fits jumping into conversation. So she's still a social person, but hers is not as I guess not as forward as my dad's. My dad is just, he walks in and he feels comfortable around people. So we definitely got that from
what does your dad do?
My dad is a contract painter. He owns his own contract painting drywall business.
Nice, nice.
My grandpa started it, and then my grandpa had polio the year before the vaccine came out.
Oh, man.
Yeah. Almost dodged a bullet. But my grandpa developed this painting business in small town DuQuoin. And
what was it called?
At the time it was Dave's Painting. And then when my grandpa, in the late 90s, post-polio syndrome really took over, and he wasn't able to keep up physically, so he
called it Colors on Wheels.
But I think the hardest part was, my dad said, was, you know, you could start to see my grandpa, how he wasn't able to do what he once did, and my grandpa was the kind of guy that was hard on him, and so he knew he had to give it up. So he sold it to my dad, and my dad just changed the name to Graham's Painting because my dad's name's not Dave.
Mm-hmm.
So he changed it to Graham's Painting, and, you know, in a small-town area, you're able to change the name, but as long as the last name fits, people know you.
Yeah.
So he's been doing that and has, you know, it's interesting how people in business... My grandpa would do more of work in people's homes, which my dad does, but my dad also likes to do commercial business things. For example, he did the Catholic Church in my hometown.
Which is?
DuQuoin, Illinois. It's a small town of about 6,000 people.
But he knows everyone there.
Oh, goodness, everyone. My dad's routine is every morning he'll go to the local diner. He has what he calls his table buddies. It's like the mafia of DuQuoin.
Okay.
It's just business owners, and he sits. Whoever, a certain day of the week,
see
it's about
Bob,
eight guys.
See the Bob Vance of that table right there?
My dad's the one that I think he's sitting there trying to figure out, how did I get into this club? I think he's waking up, trying to wait, hope he's not floating
so
in the river.
How did they, what was their, like, to raise quadruplets? Because... I can't really picture Denton, because I know I've seen pictures of him. You showed me pictures of him. But I know Jordan and Nolan look very similar. Does Denton look very similar
to
Nolan and Jordan?
So people have said, first off, Nolan and Jordan are identical.
Yes.
And then...
it's weird.
Yeah. Like,
it's off-putting.
They look... Nolan's losing his hair more. Now,
oh, that's
so
rude.
We all
so
are. It's
rude.
It's okay, except Denton.
So, what was it like being raised in that home?
So, my parents...
Give us a little perspective here.
My parents were probably the greatest parents ever.
No bias.
No. My parents have gone through a lot in their marriage. My mom and dad were very open with us early on and said, you know, we went to counseling. Because when you have four kids at the same time, and then two of us had health issues, Denton and I, because Denton has Asperger's, very high functioning, pays his own bills, basically.
And his tithes.
And his tithes, especially his tithes.
Good.
He's got a full-time job, pays his own car payment, has retirement saved up already.
Nice.
So he's very high-functioning, but he had intestinal failure. And then shortly after that, I had cancer. But being raised in that family, you know, that was a lot on my parents, and they had to go through a lot of counseling. My dad once said, I was home one night with a friend back in November, and Hurricane Harvey, or October, Hurricane Harvey had just happened. And the year before we were born, my parents were in Galveston, Houston area on vacation. And my dad said, you know, it's weird sitting there and I can see these highways that are underwater and I can say, I've been there. And he said, he looks out the window, almost like a sad movie, and he said, then everything changed. He said, that's when we found out we were having the boys.
Wow, and what a pick-me-up.
I know, I'm like sitting there and I go, Dad,
so
just tell me you love me.
Am
and
I supposed to say I'm sorry right now?
I know, and he said, he goes, then I couldn't work as late as I wanted to. I had to come home at 5 o'clock because one person can't, you know, can't get them out of the car and get them fed and all that. And he said, and then you were stuck in the house because you aren't going anywhere with four babies.
No, you were a bubble boy.
Exactly. It's the moots. But he said, and then, you know, my dad loves to have a pristine lawn. And he said, I couldn't mow as close to the house as I'd like to because, you know, you wake him up. And he said, so just everything changed. And I'm just sitting there saying, Dad, just tell me you love me. Just tell me you love me.
Please.
Please. Please. Make my childhood not sound like it was all torture.
So let's give the people a little insight. So you just said you had cancer.
Yeah.
Share a little bit of, because you were very young when all that set in.
I was about 6 to 8 months old when it first was diagnosed. What happened was I was crying all the time as a baby, my parents said. There was really no
crying more than usual.
Yes.
Because babies cry.
There was no, I think the way my parents put it to me is there was no way for me to, they couldn't get me to sleep.
Right.
They said multiple nights it was just you cried throughout the night. And finally, you know, they said something's wrong with him. Mm. And they found out that I had neuroblastoma, which is a form of cancer in my abdomen. I weighed, I believe it was either... I get the numbers wrong, but either way, the cancer basically was half my body weight.
Wow.
And so around there. And so, you know, 6 to 8 months old, I was the healthiest of my brothers. I was the first to come home.
But then it hit.
To this day, they don't know how I got it, because neuroblastoma is a kind of cancer that shows up in babies.
I mean, they had to think this was a side effect of the treatments.
It could have been, but
nobody's
ever
gone down that road.
No, nobody ever has. It was just, you know,
it just happened. Okay.
And so, went through 10 treatments of chemo. On the last, close to the last treatment, they overdosed me, basically left me to die. They would always tell my parents, my mom and dad would go up there and say, you know, they'd say, your son is going to die.
Like every chemo treatment?
Every chemo treatment, they said, we honestly don't expect him to live. He's going to die. The cancer is too big. I mean, if I had to give you a number, I would say the weight, I think I weighed, I get this number wrong, I think I was like 10 pounds, 6 pounds of it was cancer, maybe something. I may be wrong. If my mom ever listens to this, she can call you and say, no, Devin, here's what it was.
That's unbelievable. I mean, I believe you.
Yeah, it was half my body weight. And, you know, it obviously the toll that takes on me as a child.
Right,
and
your body.
Not only that, but my parents who...
Or helpless. They're helpless to do anything bring you to the treatments and then watch them blast your body with radiation.
Well, not only that, when they had us, they were on a very strict schedule for most of their lives. You know, there was a certain time to feed us and all that. And,
uh-huh.
But when that happened, Denton was kind of getting better. I think there were some times where I was in the hospital, he was in the hospital.
You'd go tag your
Yeah. So, what my mom, I mean, I joke with people because I was left alone in a hospital in St. Louis by myself when I was like 7 months old.
Wow.
My mom.
They had to be home.
They had, somebody had to be. So, what, and my mom had the insurance because she worked for a university.
Right.
So she was the one carrying the insurance. So the only way that these cancer treatments could be paid for was she worked.
She had to work.
So what she would do is she would go to work, and then after work she'd drive up to St. Louis, and sometimes she'd spend the night and then drive back to Carbondale. She'd have like a day off or so.
That's incredible.
My dad would, or my dad would come up.
Jordan, come on, man. I'm trying to tell a story.
Quit clearing your throat. And, you know, so my dad would take care of Nolan, Jordan, and Denton, and then, or a family member would, my grandma and grandpa, and then somebody would come up and take care of me. And then my mom said when she would leave at night, the nurses at Barnes Jewish Hospital would take me out of my room, put me in a bouncy seat, and just set me in the nurse's station. And my parents and my grandparents have even said, they said throughout the whole thing, you know, I'm a pretty bubbly person.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
They said throughout the whole thing, they said you always smiled as a baby.
Wow.
It was almost as if, like, God had kind of given me this personality as to, if anybody can get through it, I've given, you know, the Bible says he doesn't give us more than we can
right.
bear.
That's right.
And, he gives us some giftings to get through some things.
Yeah.
And so he, you know, in that aspect, there were some days that, yeah, it was, I guarantee you, it was probably hard on my parents. I don't remember it.
No, but you're living with the effects of
exactly.
it.
Exactly.
So you're at the 10th chemo treatment. They've overdosed you, pretty much left you to die.
And the reason I found out, so my mom told me that they overdosed me, and we found a home video right before my freshman year at Indiana Bible College. And I was just, you know, we were watching home videos
yeah.
that we had found. And I didn't know it was on there. So they would record my chemo treatments to watch me overnight
okay.
as, like, a nanny cam to make sure I...
I was like, well, that's morbid.
No, I know.
I get it now.
It's like
yeah.
Dr. Jekyll thing. No, they would have a nanny cam
yeah.
and so that they could watch and make sure that I was breathing, make sure that I was alive still. And,
yeah.
Devin, if I didn't know that the child was me,
you
I would have thought that child's going to die.
Wow.
What
was it like to watch that?
It
had to be more than surreal.
I just bawled my eyes out. And I think the only reason... Because I've compartmentalized my experiences in life.
Right.
You know, I can tell my testimony of having cancer, and I can control the tears to where I can talk through it.
Right.
It used to not be that way. But I've been able to compartmentalize the stuff. But at this point in my life, I thought I had compartmentalized everything. I knew all about the surgeries. I knew all about the doctors.
Oh, yeah. You were a graduated senior in high school.
Exactly.
You know everything at this point.
I'm just a 18-year-old who's ready to take on the world.
I know. And then you watch a video of yourself
and
dying.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And
I think
it,
most seniors need that.
It brings... Because every like, teenager about
what
to head out...
humbling.
Exactly. You don't know everything.
Well, no, that was terrible that you had to watch that.
But
it was
one of those things...
I can't even imagine.
It was one of those things that I had never seen it, so... Because I thought I've seen everything that had to deal with my cancer, and then there's this, and it was just, oh my word, like I didn't realize how bad it was.
God showed you how far you had actually come.
How far he had brought me,
yeah.
And you know that was hard, but November, I get the date wrong. It's like the beginning of November.
What year?
The year was 95. So
okay.
I was born in 94. I was born in August, so about 6 months. So, you know, that would put us around February, March time is when they diagnosed me. And that lasted all the way from about, I believe it was 95,
mm-hmm.
late 95. Because November it'll be, I'm 23, so November it'll be 23 years I've been cancer-free.
Wow. Praise God.
I know. But the thing, this story gets me all the time. My mom said, you know, the neurosurgeon, because what happened was, the reason I use crutches is because it started in my abdomen, climbed up my spinal cord, and crushed half of it. And so it crushed half of my spinal cord, and they basically chopped me open in the front, up right below my belly, and then they chopped me open in the back 3 times. They just kept using that incisions, those incisions. Because
they had to get it.
Oh, yeah. And they didn't, I mean, there's so much scar tissue there, but in their words, they said, it's either that or he dies. I mean, they butchered it. They butchered up my back. But when they went in to go get, after the 10th chemo treatment, when they went in to try and get the cancer, the neurosurgeon said, your son's going to probably die in this surgery. And he said, I'm just going to let you know that it's too big. From MRIs, from all that, I can tell it's too big.
I mean, the man was just doing his job.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. And when they came out, he looked at my mom and dad and he said, we got it all. And my mom said, I thought you said you couldn't do it. He said, I don't know how we did it. He said, but we got in there and it just, we were able to get it off.
Wow.
He said, I don't know. He goes, I mean, you know, and even then after that, you know, it's kind of like the enemy to kind of try and still, when God gives you a moment of joy, to try and steal it.
Yeah.
He said, but your son is not going to be able to walk. He will because we damaged his spinal cord was severely damaged.
Yeah.
In fact, through research of my own, and I'm no doctor, I just work at a hospital. But
I just play one on
the weekends. But through research of my own, I learned what each vertebrae and what part of that spinal cord, what the spinal cord does.
Yeah.
And because I have a bladder condition, I was interested, well, why does this happen? And if it had gone about a centimeter or two higher, I would be paralyzed.
Completely.
Completely.
Okay, so you're not. You're very capable.
Yeah.
You know, but you do, when you're out and about, you do operate with, they're crutches, but they're what?
They are Canadian crutches.
Canadian crutches.
It's the only thing from Canada I like.
Okay. Well, I will just defend them all.
all three of them.
Well, but how long did it take before you were able to walk? How long was the recovery after the surgery?
That's kind of an open-ended question because, so after that surgery and they sewed me up and, you know, there's nerve damage. Sent me home.
Tagged your brother. He went in the hospital.
He actually was clear by this point, so...
Okay.
Yeah,
so
he would be in there while I was in there
sometimes. So this is the time your parents are going, oh.
Exactly. Now we've got some one-and-a-half-year-olds that we can just kind of continue with life. We've gone through marriage counseling on it. We're good. We're ready to go. But because of the nerve damage I had, and I had hip dysplasia, which they think my hips were dislocated possibly because of the cancer being in my abdomen. So I had hip surgery and stuff like that, and then I have what they call drop foot, because
that sounds like a mean dance move.
I know. You should see me on a dance floor.
No.
Only in the church.
God. Go ahead.
But, because I have drop foot, my foot drops, and only when the beat of the...
I'm sorry.
But, only when they hit the key of E. But my foot drops, and so that caused some bone issues. The way I would walk was different. So that caused some orthopedic surgeries, which I have a great orthopedic surgeon that I've had since I was one.
What's their name?
His name is Eric Gordon.
Cool.
At Children's Hospital in St. Louis.
Okay, so do you visit... Do you still have to go in for checkups and stuff?
I have not seen him... I think the last time I saw him was I had a rod in my leg that I had removed in 2000. Let's see, it was my sophomore year at IBC, 2015. So it's been about 3 years.
It's been a while since you've seen him or had a checkup.
Yeah. I don't have to go to him as much as I used to.
You don't have schedules.
No. I have his pager, so...
okay. You send each other Christmas cards.
Exactly. That's good. They always joke that there should be a wing of the hospital named after me.
Okay. Well, yeah, it is a joke. So, let's talk about church life. Were your parents always in church? Was your family always in church? Like your grandfather?
So, my grandmother, on my dad's side, it's interesting. My dad's always been in church. He was raised in it. My mom was basically raised in it. She was Baptist until she was six.
Okay, so she had a church experience.
Yes.
Before she came in contact with Apostolic Pentecostalism.
Yes.
Okay.
And then so we have to go to my grandparents. My grandma, Graham, she was born, and she doesn't mind me saying this, she was born into a home of an alcoholic.
Oh, wow.
My great-grandpa was he was an alcoholic. I'll just leave it at that, just in case they somehow figure out about the internet. But he was just not exactly a godly man. And so my great-grandma Adams was a sweet lady.
Yeah.
But, I mean, she did not go to church. She'd read her Bible, but she just didn't go to church.
Mm.
And so my grandma had an aunt that went to the local United Pentecostal Church. And
what was her name?
I do not know that.
You don't know the aunt's name?
No, because my grandma actually started riding the bus, the church bus.
The bus, okay.
Bus ministry. And then...
who was the driver of the bus? You're not a very good keeper of the history,
Jesus,
Brandon.
No.
Jesus took the wheel?
Jesus took the wheel in the
Is
world.
Is that the joke you were going with?
Sister Carrie Underwood.
Okay, so your grandmother started taking your mother.
No, my grandmother... my grandmother that rode the church bus is my grandmother, my dad.
Okay.
My mother, my dad.
Oh, okay.
And so she... One story at a time, Devin.
Well, I'm trying to put it all together. It's a big history.
It really is. But my grandma, she rode the church bus, and then she had an aunt that was that she lived with that would take her to church after a while. When she turned about, I think, 15, 16, she decided to move in with her aunt, and her aunt took her to church. Then she met my grandpa at a youth function. And my grandpa came from a broken home, but his mother was probably the first member of our extended family that had an experience with the apostolic movement. She would take him to church. And then they got married and had my dad. My dad was raised in it, and my uncle. And they were raised in it. My mom's side, my grandpa, they come from a small town called Olmsted. It's a town of about 150. At least that's what the sign says.
Nice.
So my grandpa was a Sunday school teacher and a deacon at the local Baptist church. My grandma, served alongside him in the church. And then my mom has her and her two sisters, one older, one younger. And my aunt Angie, she I think was 10. And in the middle of a service, she went up to the front seeking... She said, in her words, she felt like there was more to God.
At the Baptist church.
At the Baptist church.
All right.
Went up to the front to pray in the middle of service, and they about had a coronary.
Yeah, there was the ushers were on her.
They told my grandparents, they said, either make her stop or leave.
Nice.
And they had already had issues with my grandpa. My grandpa was the kind of man that, they were trying to become a more liberal church. And my grandpa was trying
to... They were trying to be more liberal, but...
You gotta remember, this is the 70s, mid-70s, and they were trying to... One of the examples that was given was women were still wearing skirts and dresses to church, and they wanted to vote to let women wear pants to church. And my grandpa was the head deacon, and he pushed and said no. So they didn't like him very much.
Man.
And so when they came to my grandparents and said that, my grandma said, well, I'm not going to make her stop. So they said, okay, well, we'll leave. My grandpa, they started going to church in Cairo, Illinois, which is where my mom's great uncle, Brother Bob Burchett, pastored. For many years. And
so they start going to this church.
They start, without my grandpa, they start going to this church.
It's a Pentecostal church.
My mom's great uncle was the presbyter of the section.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it was steep. I mean, it's...
It's in there.
It's in there. It's a... It, there's no hiding
Which
it.
One of the sisters got the Holy Ghost first?
My aunt first service
there. Your aunt's got the Holy Ghost. She's 10 years old. How old's your mother?
My mom was 6 at the time,
I believe. 6 at the time.
And then my other one was my...
When did your grandmother get the Holy Ghost?
Pretty soon after, I think. I'm pretty sure it was... Not very many services after.
Was your mother young when she got the Holy Ghost?
Yeah, she got it at camp. She was.
She went to the Illinois campground.
Yes, up in good old Wapella.
Nice, nice.
It still hasn't changed.
I mean, they've added some stuff on it. They've added some new dormitories.
Yeah, after 20 years.
Well,
shout out to Brother Frazee for finally helping finish those. That man is the greatest man in the history of the Illinois District.
Oh, okay. Well, according to Brandon Graham.
He's a great man.
You shot yourself in the
I really did.
Anything.
I know.
Illinois District.
I'm about to be licensed and everything. I'm like, we're not going to have this young man ever.
Calltharps are coming after you.
Love Brother Calltharp.
But no, seriously, when did your grandfather ever come into it?
He did. So my mom's great uncle started kind of, his health started declining, and so the church started changing hands. And so they went to a church in Cape Girardeau, Missouri, pastored by Brother Doyle Randall. So he, the first service, and, you know, he would go off and on during Easter when they were growing up.
And your grandfather's with us in the church service at this time.
The first service he goes to.
The first one.
He gets the Holy Ghost.
I love that.
And
those stories.
He has been in it ever since.
And this is your mother's father?
Yes.
Nice.
So now both families
are in.
They're in.
Okay.
They're in. And then,
when did your parents meet each other?
So they
Camp?
Went. No. My dad was at a youth rally. My dad was the kind of guy who would go on dates with. He said, I just liked asking girls on dates just because it was fun.
Well, I mean, there's nothing wrong with that.
No, my mom was
My mom
was from the middle of nowhere, didn't meet people very much. They met at a youth rally in Sparta, Illinois, and so my dad couldn't remember my mom's name, but he remembered where she went to church.
Okay.
My dad's the only man I've ever heard of doing this. He drove down there to a church service by himself, didn't see her, it freaked him out, had to testify the whole nine yards. So, there's nothing to eat. It's a Sunday night.
Yeah.
Saturday night, because they had Saturday night service. It's a Saturday night, and
Saturday night service?
They had service about 5 times a week.
Oh, man.
If I read you the schedule, we'd be here for a while.
Saturday night? Okay, go ahead.
But he walks in, couldn't see her, and he said, you know, I couldn't remember her name, and my mom was the rebellious one, and I say that in, like, the most... kind cliche
tongue in cheek.
Yeah. She wasn't rebellious, but they had boys sit on one side, girls sit on another for the youth.
Yeah.
And my mom was playing piano, and she gets done playing piano and walks right back and sits by my dad. My dad's just like, because my dad's the kind of guy, after 11 o'clock you're off the phone. You have no reason to be on the phone with a girl after 11. You want her parents to respect
you.
And so, you know, he's like, this is the first time I don't even know her name, and she's just like trying to hold
my
hand.
She's getting fresh.
Exactly.
Back pew of the church.
So,
you are really painting an awesome picture of your parents.
They're going to listen to this and be like, they weren't in the back pew. They were probably in the middle. Somewhere in the middle.
Surrounded by a great cloud of witnesses.
Exactly.
About
35.
Yeah, yeah. He said, what's your name again?
So... They, after church, she goes, well, Eric, there's nowhere to, he said, where's there to eat? And she said, well, everything's closed. There's nothing to eat. So we have to drive back to, Olmsted, which is where they were from. And so that's about a 30-minute drive into the middle of nowhere.
Nice.
So, you know, it's my dad, my mom, and then my aunts in the back seat chaperoning.
Chaperoning.
Driving to my grandparents' house. At the time, my grandpa didn't go, to church.
Oh.
So they walk in the door. My grandpa's sitting there fiddling on the guitar. And they would sit in the living room. My grandma was the one that was more vocal.
Oh, really?
Yes. So my mom introduces my dad and says, Mom, Dad, this is Eric. And she said, I apologize. I don't remember your last name. He goes, that's okay. I don't remember your name at all.
Wow.
They celebrate 28 years of marriage this year. So it shows you don't have to know anything about the girl. You just have to have a little bit of
Brother
faith.
Brother Gaddy was right. He preached it, I think, maybe 6 years ago at Youth Congress or something. You know, if you're looking at afar, you're going to notice how they look first, and then you're going to find out their name.
Exactly.
Yeah. But that's great. That's great. And, you know, and the rest is history, or so they say.
Yeah. Grandma played 20 questions with them. They would go on. He'd drive down there on Saturday nights to go to church with her, take her on dates.
So it was kind of like he saw her at the youth rally. Then he knew there was a connection. He sought it out.
Yeah. And at the time, my dad said, he goes, I was done dating. And he said...
He was wore out.
He was done. He's like, I was ready to get married. Nice. I was ready to have my... Everybody in my youth group was either married or backslidden. He said...
Oh, so he married out of peer pressure.
Exactly. Okay. No, I'm joking.
Glad this time it worked out.
I know.
Let's talk about your home church.
Okay.
Which is where again?
So, the church that Jordan
what
and I kind of grew up in.
Yeah, what church did you all grow up in?
Landmark Apostolic Church in Sparta. We started going there when we were about 13. The church we grew up in DuQuoin, God had us, had other plans, and we helped minister in Sparta since we were 13 with our parents. Our mom's a music director, plays piano.
At Sparta?
At Sparta. My dad's the Sunday school superintendent of
cool.
the church and also a board member. And so we went there from the time we were 13 till we went to college. And my pastor back home, Doug Rice, probably one of the greatest men I'll ever meet.
No bias.
No bias. No, this is a completely non-biased thing. We'll get to heaven one day and figure all this out.
Yeah, we will know all things.
But it just that church came into our lives when we needed it most. Just a very loving church, very, very friendly church.
Were you all problem children?
No. No, trust me. If there
You're
was
pretty
any
well behaved.
If there was any problems, it was taken care of at home.
Jordan, was that true? He'll test.
Jordan's probably the one problem, just because once he set. I say this not in a problem way. 4th of July, he did one. One 4th of July, he set the grass on fire with some sparklers.
Here's the bus.
Backing it up. No.
You set the grass on fire with sparklers. Okay, well that's pretty like.
That's pretty mild. So that's exactly how we were as children. We were just...
Smokey the Bear was the maddest one out of that.
We were just mild. We weren't really problem children.
Well, good.
I think just because...
I'm sure other people may disagree, but that's all.
Probably, but you know what? They can fight me on it.
I would love to watch somebody come up to you and, like, try and start a physical confrontation.
Crutches go flying. That's the first thing that happens. You start swinging.
I mean, nobody would probably let it happen, but it'd just be so. Just the whole visual just is funny to me. So, Pastor Rice, he was a great mentor to you.
Yes.
So, tell me, in the church that you grew up in, I try and ask everybody this question: who were your encouragers? That you can, I mean, I know I'm kind of putting you on the spot here, but if you could, you know, pick somebody out and say, this person encouraged me. I mean, even if it is the normal people like your parents or your pastor, but who would you say?
So, obviously my pastor.
Right.
Because
that's the correct answer.
He gave me the first chance to preach when I was about 14.
Nice.
How'd
you do?
I was very monotone. It's somewhere on YouTube, which is really scary, and I shouldn't have said
what?
That. Yeah, it's bad.
Oh, wow.
Mom used to record everything. You know,
no kidding.
That was when YouTube was first coming
kidding.
Up.
She had home videos of the chemo treatments.
Oh yeah. No, she and if she would have let us be on Oprah, that would have been on recording too.
What?
Yeah, we were asked to be on Oprah. If she becomes president, I'm gonna be really bitter.
Okay.
But. Side note. But
you were asked to be on Oprah. Even,
but
just decided to throw that in there, Brandon.
Just throw it in there.
Oh, by the way, we were almost on Oprah.
We were asked and we said no.
We turned Oprah down.
Exactly. President Oprah, we turned her down.
Oh, don't speak that in.
I'm not going to.
Come on. Go ahead.
But,
anyways.
No, he gave me the first chance to preach. And to minister, and then...
So he saw something in you, he believed in your calling.
Yeah, and then...
Did he work with you?
He did.
Was there a discipleship program at your church in some way?
Almost in a... it was kind of like personal sense.
Oh, wow, well, that's amazing.
Well, we would have...
How big was your church?
We probably run about 100, 120.
And there was still, he still had time to work with you personally?
Off and on. I mean, it was through phone calls and stuff like that.
But that's still pretty amazing.
There's still times where he...
Because a pastor's position is incredibly demanding.
Yeah, and especially at the time he was working a full-time job along with that.
Oh, really? Well, yeah. Kudos to him, because that is amazing.
I know. But he was definitely, he's somebody that invested in my life very heavily.
Who else?
My youth pastor, Bryce Jones.
Bryce Jones.
He
what a name.
Just Bryce was the kind of person that we would sit down and have just because the Bible is always interested in me. You know, I was we would sit down and have discussions that were very interesting and stuff like that about theology and things like that, and he would give me opportunities to teach in youth class. Certain men along the way, some of my influences, the church I grew up in DuQuoin, Bishop C.L. McInnes, just a great man of God. I mean, just his passion for the Lord, just emulating that. Those are some of the people, my dad and my mom.
Right, of course.
But for always supporting me.
So, I mean, I have to ask, growing up with your condition, was it hard? It's not funny, Jordan. Was it ever hard, did you have a thing about being singled out? Like people giving you preferential treatment? Did you not care?
I really didn't care.
Just like, sure, give me the attention.
Whenever people ask how it's like being disabled, I said I get great parking everywhere I go. except I wonder what the parking situation's like at the Special Olympics. That's probably really rough. Okay.
You're the only one in this room that's able to make that joke.
I know. And I've never even been to the Special Olympics.
Oh, man. What do you think you could compete in if you went to the Special Olympics?
Well, first, I don't think I'd do the Special Olympics.
Wait, but it's not. It's more like it's for handicapable people.
It is.
You could do that horse thing. The gymnastics thing.
See, this thing, I have a lot of upper body strength. I have a lot of upper body strength, so something upper body related. I don't know. Do they do wheelbarrow races there? Is it like a massive... Here's the thing. Is it like a massive middle school PE class?
The visual alone was worth the question. I'm so sorry. Getting back to your thing. So coming up... you didn't want you didn't mind the treatment. So
I never wanted it.
Okay.
The one time I did want it, and this is when I have this saying where if I wasn't in church, I'd either be a comedian or an actor.
Okay.
I don't know how I would do it either one, but
you just feel like you have an outgoing personality.
Yeah, I'm good at
that. You enjoy performing.
Exactly.
Okay.
I was in second grade, and I was sitting in a class, and a kid touched my foot, and I was like, I'm going to mess with him. And I said, ow, that hurt. I was just joking.
Do you have any feeling in your foot?
No, I'm nerve damaged. I have some feeling on the tops. Over time, nerve damage heals, so I've gotten some, but bottoms, no.
Okay.
I can tell you're touching me, though, if you touch my feet. So he touched my foot, and I was like, ow, that hurt. And he kept doing it, and I was like, well,
this person's so hateful.
I was like, I kind of want to go home. And it wasn't hurting. He was just tapping it. And I go, ow, ow. And I start fake crying. And he goes, teacher, Brandon's foot's hurting. And they come over and they go, Brandon, are you okay? I was like, no, I hurt really bad. So they went and got a wheelchair, wheeled me to the nurse's office. My dad came and picked me up, and I went and took a nap.
How old are you?
I was 7.
Okay.
7 or 8.
So you were an awful child who lied.
Oh, I knew how to play the system.
Used your disability.
I still know how to play the system.
We're going to paint you in the right light. So it wasn't a problem being singled out for you. You didn't ask for it in that way, but
I didn't. I hated it. I won't lie. There's parts of it that hated it, especially like I didn't mind
it's a constant reminder. Like you need this attention.
And you can't do this.
Right.
And that's almost a challenge to me.
Right.
I played Little League Baseball because of that.
Really?
Yeah. Got to hit off a kid who was a college quarterback. So that's probably my life achievement.
That's the highest...
one of my life achievements.
Okay.
But, you know, when it came to church, I really didn't like it. Because growing up in Pentecost, being handicapped in Pentecost is probably the worst thing ever.
Okay.
I mean...
Why is that?
So you can't go... there's a healing service. Oh, goodness. I'm 5 miles away from it.
Have you had anybody try and bring their faith to your need?
So... 2012 General Conference, because I lived near St. Louis, so we would go there on Wednesday nights.
Yeah.
They canceled church. Church would go to General Conference. I'm sitting with my friends Ashton and Hannah Lloyd, and, you know, Jeff Arnold's preaching, and he starts his message. He starts getting towards healing. And at big conferences, I normally try to stay away from the front, because if I walk up there with crutches, somebody's
trying. The camera's on you.
Oh, somebody's trying
ready
to get the preacher to notice. They just want to get up there and say, "This boy got healed! Like I'm some deer they shot." Look, Daddy's a 10-point buck. But so they're pushing for healing, and my friends, they go up to the front, and I'm just standing there singing, and they go, "Brandon, come on." I'm like, "No, guys, no." Because when I was about 13, not 13, I was about 12, God convicted me. Because I got the Holy Ghost at 8, and then for about 2 to 3 years, I only prayed for healing. And God convicted me because at a Illinois Youth Convention, Paul Price was preaching. He brought me up on the stage, and he said, "You know, this boy was worshiping God." Except he said, "He probably can't put his own pants on." I was like, "No!" Killed my chances with any of the ladies that week.
Okay. Okay,
so
we're at General Conference,
so,
2012.
So, you know, but at that time God convicted me and said, "If I'm still God, and if I never heal you, I'm still God." And so that,
yeah.
I just don't pray for healing.
Yeah.
And so I come down to the front. They finally convince me, and it's about 15 minutes in. You know how General Conference services are. After a while, they just start, the singers go sit down because they've been singing for 3 hours in between offerings.
Right.
And then the musicians, they're just. They haven't played with any good musicians in probably 6 months, so they're just like, "Let's just play."
Yeah.
And I'm just standing there, and this guy comes up behind me, puts his hands on my shoulders, and starts weighing me down. I mean, he's pushing. And I go, "Oh, great." And he goes, "God, heal this boy!" I'm like, "Not one of these guys." So he prays. And takes his hands off me, takes a few steps back. And I don't know what possessed me that night. I look over my shoulder, and I see he's still looking at me. I go, "I'm going to mess with him." And I can walk without my crutches pretty well. I can't run, but I can walk without them. So, you know, I just decided to take my crutches. And all this is in a split second, because I got to make it look believable. I take my crutches, and I throw them. And I just start walking without them. And this guy, I turn around to look at his face, and his jaw is to the floor, and he is he's lost it. I mean, somewhere he's preaching a revival. I have given this man 20 revivals, and you know, whatever I can do for the kingdom of God.
You just want to be a blessing.
I just want to be a blessing to somebody.
Oh, man.
If somebody got their healing because I faked mine, I'm happy.
Oh, did that ever happen at Calvary? Did anybody ever come? And-
No. Because I think this says a lot about Calvary Tabernacle as a church and Pastor Mooney as a pastor, and even the staff. When you teach, people understand. And I think there are people that are zealous in the Lord who did pray for me, and they were very sincere in what they said and what they meant. But, you know, I think sometimes we have to understand that some people are meant to be healed in a moment so that they can be a testimony to those around them.
Right.
And be, and like the lame man that was healed, and, you know, Jesus said, "Go, rise, and walk."
Right.
And basically said, "Don't tell anybody."
Right.
Because it's a moment to, and it's a testimony. And then some people are meant to live through adversity and through trials because it's a testimony of endurance of the Lord.
It's all about a testimony.
Exactly.
It's all about glorifying God.
And I think ultimately, getting back to the Saints of Calvary, when you understand and when you have, when your leadership has taught and your leadership understands how the Spirit works, because there can be people can be taken advantage of in that way.
Wow.
If the wrong person had come into my church when I was between the ages of 8 and 11, they could have really done some church abuse to me.
Because mess with your faith.
Mess with my faith. And I've had people try to do that.
Cold, Jordan?
No, I'm going to the
store. Is my food not good enough for you? I cooked. Slaved away. No, but...
great wife.
Get wrecked, Brandon.
I know. I shouldn't have gone off the cuff.
Yeah.
But, what I was going to say was, they... At the church Jordan and I are attend now, Lifeway Apostolic here in Avon. Back in June or July, we had a man come in, a man with his wife. And she had a mullet and a terrible lipstick job, and his breath smelled like death, and he had a shofar. So you could tell they are just
some classy.
And he was praying, and God was moving, and we had some people up at the altar, and he's lifting his hands praying. And, I mean, I'm thinking, it sounds terrible. They don't look like they've been to church before. Or they look like they've had an experience, but
okay.
I'm going to go pray for them.
Yeah.
So I'm praying for them. And Brother Kilman taught us once in IBC. He said there's no problem with stopping somebody and saying, what do you need, God? What do you need from God? Because you can do better with directional prayer, leading people in prayer, than you can if people are just... I mean, some people start beating up on themselves, like,
right.
God, I'm not good enough, and you're so good. But that's
right.
A way of beating themselves up.
Right.
And so I stopped him and I said, what do you need something? And his wife leans over and said, he's an intercessor. I'm like, okay. And I see his shofar and I'm just like, oh, great, what have I gotten myself into? So he goes, I pray that I need more power. Okay. So I pray for him, I'm like not knowing what to pray because it threw me off. So I said, God, give him your spirit, give him anointing, give him favor. And he stops me and he said, do you believe God can heal you? And I go, yes, sir. I said, but he goes, then why haven't you thrown down your crutches yet? And I said, because one day my corruptible body will put on incorruptible.
Oh, yeah.
And he said, but doesn't he make all things new? And I said, yes. And he said, you don't have any faith.
Oh, well. Got you.
And see, at 23, or well, at time 22, I had enough understanding to know how to refute that.
Right.
And how to walk away from that and not think, God, am I not good enough? Do I not
right.
have enough faith? Because... and this man wanted to start a worship barn and stuff like that. And Pastor Brian here
worship
in
worship barn?
Yeah, he just wanted to go to a barn and teach people how to do Levitical worship.
Oh,
one of those guys. But
an insane person.
Exactly.
Okay.
Somebody who's taken Jesus and gone off the rails.
Well, he didn't take Jesus.
He didn't take Jesus, but he took some teachings of Jesus and tried to make them his own.
Right.
Pastor Brian here in Avon has taught, if he's taught me one thing, he's taught me, ask people who their influences are. Ask people who their pastor is. Because if you ask them who their pastor is, you find out where they get most of their ideas and most of their influences.
Yeah.
And, pastor asked him that, and he didn't give him an answer.
Oh.
And so you'll
red
know.
Flag number 23.
Exactly. You will know. People who have crazy ideas, things that are not biblical, when they don't have authority in their life.
Mm-hmm.
Because if they have authority, somebody's correcting them.
Right.
And
right.
This man needed some correction.
Let's go back a little bit. Let's talk about you're going into Indiana Bible College.
Mm-hmm.
What made you choose Indiana Bible College? Keep in mind, I get nothing for this. I'm just curious.
So, again, it goes back to my youth pastor, Bryce. We would have... theological conversations.
Did you feel a call to the ministry before Bible school, or did you go...
Before.
Before.
But...
I mean, I know you said you preached at, what, 14?
Yeah. I had preached out By the time I was at IBC, I had preached out maybe about 5 or 6 times.
Oh, come on, little David.
And so, you know, and I had preached probably once every 3 months at my home church back home on a Sunday night. So I, you know.
So did you go into Bible school thinking you were big stuff?
No. No. I honestly, and I say that with all sincerity, I went in because I wanted to learn. I remember my freshman year of high school giving a speech because education was pushed in my family. My mom has a master's degree.
Yeah.
And I was thinking, well, if I want to go to college, I want to go to college for something that interests me, and the Bible interests me. And so, especially the oneness of God. So what really got me was I listened to a lot of podcasts, and I found the Calvary Young Adults podcast. Fantastic podcast. I'm not getting paid for this either.
Right. So you got Bobby Kilman, you got Juan Lopez.
Exactly.
Yeah, yeah, good stuff, good stuff.
So I would listen to Brother Kilman's stuff on the oneness of God, mm-hmm. and it interested me so much. So I went to IBC Connect, and we went twice, actually, me, Nolan, and Jordan. But I wanted to... I've always wanted to get my master's degree in biblical studies, at least my master's, maybe my doctorate. I just love learning.
So was this your first college experience?
This was. Okay. Well, I took community college courses in high school.
Okay.
But, like English
and
stuff.
You don't have a problem with secular education.
No.
I think my question is, did you feel a call to go to Bible school?
I did.
Okay.
I did.
Because some people have a call to ministry.
Yeah.
But not everybody has a call to Bible school.
To answer that question in a roundabout way, make it quick, there was a camp where I won Camper of the Year. And I was praying, and I said, God, you know...
Not brag.
My parents have...
Did they give it to you?
I had it rigged. No, I had it rigged. There's no... My friend Eric Schmidt was this team leader, and they were doing this point system, and he would come up to me and say, what nice thing have you done? And I was like, I've sat here and not done anything. He goes, that's nice. Here's 50 points. I mean, you can go ask Brother Wilhelm, Brother Greg Wilhelm. I had it rigged.
Oh, okay.
Nobody was walking out of that without me.
Camp experience.
But before that, I had prayed. You know, my mom and dad couldn't afford to send 4 kids to college at the same time.
No.
And so, especially IBC, there wasn't a lot of scholarships that could support it, secular scholarships that could support it. So I prayed and said, God, if I need you to provide, and I won a $1,000 scholarship my sophomore year of high school at Illinois Camp. And then my senior year of high school, I got 2 $500 scholarships from local businesses. They didn't care where it went.
Nice.
My second IBC Connect, I was at the concert in CCS Chapel where they used to have it. And I was praying, and God said, put this in your phone. Everything that I've promised will come to pass. So I put it in my phone, and I gave...
You lost your phone.
No, I didn't lose my phone. That was my first iPhone. I wasn't losing that. So I get home the next day, and my parents had reapplied for me to get disability. I had turned 18, so I was no longer being based off their income. And at the time, I was a senior in high school. It was February. I had $50 in my maybe $150 in my bank account, and I was working at an after school program that paid me maybe $70 every 2 weeks. And after I paid my phone bill, gas, you know, I mean,
you're struggling.
And Gail Nelson's not going to let me walk in the doors for free there.
No.
And so, but when I walk in, I see this check on my bed for my disability, and in the number that it was. I did start doing the math, and I had 4 months, and I started doing the math, and it was exactly how much I needed for a down payment plus some.
Nice.
And,
ain't it just like the Lord?
It is. So God had his hand upon that situation.
Your journey to Bible school.
Exactly.
Do you, it's all good memories from your time at IBC?
Yes.
Bible College, at least from what, being a member of Calvary Tabernacle,
yeah,
and watching all these classes come through, and then, you know, kind of, when I could, start keeping track of who came out and what they did afterwards. Two types of people leave Bible school. They're either on fire, ready to go, ready to do the work, or they leave cynical and backslidden.
Yeah.
Obviously, you are the former, not the latter.
But I was. It's a fine line. I think in Bible college you see people, and you know we see people that they hold these positions and they have these. They're very talented singers, musicians, preachers.
Well, so you start seeing, but what a teaching opportunity that is for yourself to see these human beings put in positions, entrusted with some sense of responsibility, and you actually have to follow your peers in this moment. So
yeah.
What a humbling experience for you, and then to also learn that you're going to be put, I mean, you know this isn't going to change.
Yeah.
So it kind of sets the stage, like, okay, this is what it is.
And
are you willing to live your life like
you,
this?
You said, you know, two people leave either on fire or burnt out, or burnt out and cynical.
Yeah.
I left just tired. After my senior year, when we came to Lifeway, you know, Jordan, when he had started playing piano, and he's like, I just want somewhere that God will use me. And Brother Brian said, I want you to work with the youth. And then he said, Brandon, what do you want to do? And granted, you know, I had, at this point,
but
I
you
had,
were very involved at Indiana Bible College.
From my freshman year, I was elected freshman class president. I was in Anthem my sophomore year, Chorale my junior year. Got kicked out of Chorale into Anthem again.
I got to tell you, one of my favorite things is a group I'm involved with at Calvary. We were learning Our God Reigns.
Oh.
It was the version that IBC did. So I would post the link for the kids to watch. The greatest thing
Chris Henderson had to
do
a lot of editing of that.
Is watching your face while your roommate Matt Davis is going in on his solo.
Man.
And your face.
I was so proud of that. Here's the thing.
It was like you were singing at that very moment.
IBC.
It was so entertaining.
So I think IBC gives you, IBC, if I can thank IBC for one thing, I thank God for the friends that I've got. I've got,
you make lifelong friendships.
I'm in a group with, three guys, or group text, with three guys, White on Rice, Aaron Romine, we're a boy band that never sings, Aaron Romine, Matt Hester, and Matt Davis. They're literally some of the best friends anybody could ever have.
Those are some good people.
I mean,
those are good people.
And not only that, you know, I could miss so many people. Seton Munson,
yeah.
Jordan Freeman, my roommate,
yeah.
Just many people that I met throughout my time that just impacted.
Let's go back. You mentioned something. What was it like having the Chorale position than not having the Chorale position? Are you still bitter about that?
I mean, something. No, I'm joking. you know, I've had 2 years separated from it. Because it was something I really...
Because that's something.
It was something I had really wanted, and, you know, I had tried out every semester.
To be selected, to be a part of the top-tier vocalists.
Not only that, but to get to sing front line and have callbacks on songs.
Right.
And then the next moment, you have Brother Anderson say, you didn't make it.
Which, you know, it's not a personal thing.
No. I don't hold that against...
You gotta give Dr. Anderson that, is that... It's never personal.
No.
It's always...
It's well, who works well with the group.
Right.
And at the time, I won't lie, I was bitter.
Of course.
It was because...
If you said anything else, I would call you a liar.
I went through my junior year... My sophomore year, junior year was probably the two greatest years of my time at IBC because freshman year would have been great if I hadn't tried to just go on so many days with girls. But
a little bit of your daddy coming through. A
little bit.
Yeah.
But
what I loved is that even though you didn't have that happening, you may have been bitter, but so your whole media presence that you put in afterwards, you dive. It seemed to me, looking at it as an outsider, it looked like you dived into it and just...
I almost didn't.
Was somebody have to encourage you to do that?
Chris Henderson.
Christopher Henderson.
Brother Henderson, to this day, is probably one person I look up to the most, and I will say he...
Oh, man.
I know. Not many people could say that. No, I'm joking. He's a great guy. But
he has his moments.
He really... He really pushed me, because I come off this high of my junior year where basically my best friends are still there, outside of Matt Hester, but he would come up and hang out. And, you know, I'm in chorale, which is all I ever wanted. I get to sing Frontline at Indiana Bible College Live with, you know, just on a great song. Fantastic. Complete Surrender was a fantastic song.
Mm-hmm.
And then to have that
taken.
Just next year's gone. And, you know, it... But my senior year, I feel like this is how my junior year was. God was giving me everything I wanted. And then the next year, he was preparing me for what he needed me for. Because I was put back in Anthem with Sister Jess, which is another person that invested in me.
Di Giovanni.
She just... I mean, I don't think there's anybody that supported me vocally or even in music as much as she did. I mean, she's somebody that I look up to.
Yeah, she's pretty great.
But, you know, being put back in that group and then kind of helping with the vocals, because I was the senior amongst all these freshmen.
Follow me.
Follow me. Still remember that. that's an inside joke.
I'll never forget it. Somebody was going off rails, and then I'm sitting there watching it all happen. And sure enough, here comes the senior member, Brandon.
Here's the thing.
Brandon turns to this.
She was trying to go back to the chorus, and we were in the bridge still.
Brandon
and
turns to her and pumps his chest, and I see him lip, follow me.
I was told that I was giving signs, and I was trying to figure out why she was trying to go to another part of the song. Anyway, we're not going to harbor anything about that.
Okay, so you... What my point is that after that happened, you had these people that were there to catch you.
Exactly.
Because it wasn't like they didn't stop, they didn't see any value.
No. And I think, you know, I thank Brother Anderson for God doing that, ultimately, because...
Brandon.
No, but for God putting it in the situation that it happened,
okay,
to where Brother Anderson... you know, maybe I got worse vocally, and he's like, man, I don't want this kid in there anymore. No, he knew. I think, honestly, when he asked me to do media, it was a struggle. And I called my pastor, and I called my parents,
and
I was
quit. I'm sure it was a struggle. I'm sure it was a big old pride thing.
It was.
But you're very good.
Well, ultimately, it came down to we're getting close to IBC Live.
And they needed somebody
and
to do it.
I, you know, I'm doing media for Chorale. And at this point, you know, I told Brother Henderson, I said, if I'm going to do this, I'm going to do it the way nobody's ever done it. I said, because I'm not going to just sit back there and click. I said, if God gave me this opportunity, I said, then I'm not just going to sit back there and click.
Right.
So I scoured the internet, and I found some resources, and I was...
You did. You scoured and you found it, and you did it better than anyone's ever done media.
I was up till
up till
5 a.m. four nights in a row at Calvary.
Well, bless your little
even
heart.
Even did my laundry up in the laundry machine up there.
I mean, I'm sure somebody's feeling sorry for you right now.
But
my whole thing is that you had a solid career at Indiana Bible College.
I did.
And
it was
made great friends that still last to this day, but you've gotten busy with a work here in the greater Indianapolis area.
Yeah,
primarily Avon, which
yeah,
you've referenced several times. Tim Bryan is a fantastic guy.
Oh, he and his wife Sister Teresa are just
You
know, fantastic people.
I'm thoroughly impressed with what they're doing here in Avon, and it's inspiring. It's not so much... It's not so much he's just starting a church. It's his drive and passion towards it. He's so convinced. His faith is what's inspiring.
Yeah.
It's like, I know I'm supposed to be here
exactly
doing this.
Exactly.
And it's not like he's just going through the motions. You're seeing fruits of his efforts. You told me how many did you have there last Sunday?
We had, I think, about 70, 75.
And they've been there almost
the This is
years.
The third year.
I mean, that is amazing.
Not only that, but in our old building back in July, our last service, I think we had about 35, 40, some 45 maybe. I may be skewing the numbers a bit. And then 3 to 4 months later, we're up to about 60, 70.
God's blessing the efforts.
Really
and
is.
And you, you're very involved with the music at the church. You're the main worship leader?
I'm basically the de facto worship leader. Jordan plays piano, so we what we'll do is we'll sit down and, you know, get together the sets and all that, and then I'll do practices on Thursday nights and stuff like that. And then when I got there, I'm a graphic designer on the side, so I redid their logo, brought it up to the 21st century.
Okay.
It was very, very much like, I'm just going to leave it at that. I just brought it up to the 21st century. And, you know, over time I've been developing our own welcome cards and stuff like that. So I do graphic design with it. And then we're starting a podcast here within the next week.
For your services.
For our services. So I entail all that. And then I actually came to Brother Brian because my real passion is young adults.
Uh-huh.
People my age, people who are in college.
That's good. That's good. Because a lot of people, they'll burn out in that age group.
Yeah.
They'll get lost.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And it ultimately, my biggest thing is if people understand why they do things, they'll continue to do it. So if I understand why I live for the Lord, I'll continue to live for the Lord.
Right.
And I feel like that age group is overlooked because we spend so much time with Sunday school and youth, and then when you're 18 to 30... You're supposed to go to the church where they're talking about what applies to the family, marriage, and kids, which there's times, obviously, where the sanctuary applies to everybody, but there's also times where you need to separate, and it's like, hey...
Do you think this is something new? It sounds kind of millennial...
It is very millennial.
I mean,
because you got to look. This year I'll be 24.
I think it was Time Magazine just released an article that most millennials are not, you know, they're not really focused. They say it's not that we're not focused on family; it's that we can't take our eyes off career. Because they feel like they can't afford it.
Exactly.
Which, I mean, I don't know if that's...
I don't know if that's true.
True or not. I just know somebody wrote it.
Ultimately, we have to look at it this way. Millennials,
please, Brandon, wrap up the whole millennial thing for everybody.
I can't, but it's crazy because I'm about to be 24, and when my dad was 24, he had been married for 4 years, and he was finding out that he was having 4 boys. And I'm not even dating somebody, let alone married. And so...
Let alone.
And so it's a different world we live in because I hear people say a lot of times millennials aren't committed or lazy. It's... No, I don't... I'll get committed. Here's the thing. Is when I have... to jobs, when I have a family and a wife. Right now, it's just me. And
is that a problem? Do you think that this? Okay, you and your just take a survey, a mental quick survey of you and your friends, and try and be as honest as possible. Is the me aspect of it holding everybody back? Is like I don't think I can get past myself, just taking care of myself. To grasp the concept of taking care of somebody else.
We make, financially, yes, because we make the world sound like it is so much more harder to live in and expensive than what it actually is. But then again, there are some great people even in the apostolic movement that are around my age that are doing great things for God. Chris...
Let's not name names.
Okay. But there's many people that are in their
just take our word for it.
Mid-20s that are starting churches, evangelizing, and, you know, they're very committed to the work of the Lord.
Yeah.
And it's just, you know, we can't say that this generation is a generation that they're not committed or they're lazy. It's just, it's a different generation. Much like the baby boomers were different, much like, you know, there's very many different complexes.
I hate to give anything to it because everybody thinks that they're different. I think it's the same thing. It's just a different coat of paint.
Exactly.
Really. But, I mean, that sounds cynical. I think that's a realistic view of it.
I agree.
Let's digress here just real quick before we head out. Talk to me about your take on worship leading. What does that mean to you? How do you approach that week to week?
So, I, coming from a home that was very much musical, you know, my brother Nolan works for a church as a sound engineer in Florida, and then...
Whose church?
The Ballesteros in Clearwater.
Oh, yep.
And then,
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And then,
You have... Wow, that's some pressure.
He's doing a great work down there. I'm proud of him. But then Jordan, you know, Jordan and I up here,
You both are doing good work up here.
Yeah.
I'll go ahead and pay you the compliment.
Thank you. But, we come from that, and it's always been taught to me that putting together... I try to take a worship set seriously in the sense that it's a prayer. You are leading people through into the presence of God, and your set should have almost like a prayer to it.
Okay.
So I don't want to sing whatever's the coolest, newest song. I do want to sing something that the congregation connects with. So, in the sense of worship leading, I am there to help be the example for somebody because I'm up on the platform and
right.
The worship team is up on the platform and the singers I have with me are fantastic. And we are praising God, but we are also showing people in the congregation how to praise God almost in a sense of...
More in the way of leading them.
Yeah. That sounds very... Thank you for correcting me theologically.
Yeah.
But in the sense of if there's somebody new who has never experienced church and they think, well, what am I supposed to do? I want to be up there.
Yeah, you're being an example.
I want to be an example to them. And so that's how I take worship leading. I take it as that and I take it as it ultimately, I want something that my heart can connect with and give to God.
Right. So it's interesting you say your heart. Do you have a bias when you're selecting songs?
I try not to. Because I like to take the congregation into
consideration.
I try to think of everybody in the congregation, so I try to mix in.
Well, that's good.
Yeah.
Because I think people do a disservice to their congregation when they don't try and broaden the flock's palate.
Yeah.
You know,
like there was one service where I put in. We went into In the Cross.
Out of what?
I can't remember.
Okay.
But it was
a
2010 song.
That's a great old song.
Exactly. And so I try to include those songs because not only do they minister to the older generation, there's still meat on that bone.
And that it can edify any generation.
Exactly. And
the only people I know that have a problem with that are those who are ageists on the younger end of it.
Yeah.
They're just they have a real issue with it.
And it's because we think that God can only move if we're singing the newest Hillsong or Elevation Worship song.
I've heard some crazy things come out of people's mouths in regards to taking God Works in the New way out of context. It's not about new or old. It's about worshiping Him and making sure that we're all reaching every member of the congregation.
It's about a new song to that person's heart.
Right.
Which, I mean, you know, I could sing We Praise Your Name by Trent Corey. I've heard it for 10 years. But if I sing it in a church set in my church...
Is that an old song to you?
No, but it's 10 years old. So I'm saying to me, you know, it's not what it used... It's not that it's lost its flavor,
right.
But it's something that I could sing it and I just go through the motions with it sometimes.
Random question. What is, in your mind, a modern-day hymn? So a song... Let's put some parameters on it. Like a song written in the past... it can be in the past 30 years. So what, in your mind, is a modern-day hymn?
So a lot of the... I would say a lot of the stuff like Holy Ground.
You think the song Holy Ground by, is it Passion? Is it?
No, not that one. Not the new one. Goodness, goodness.
Oh,
you're talking in the last 30 years. That one's like from the 80s, right?
Okay, well then, yeah, it does. It counts. Well, no, because
Are we wanting to do like the 20 years? 25?
I think that would actually... I think that song would actually go beyond the 30 mark. So, yeah, let's just go into 20 years.
Okay, so you have to look at some songs.
Because you were talking about We Are Standing.
Yeah.
Okay, so, yeah, let's go in the back 20 years.
Okay. To me, that question is hard to nail down because there are...
Then you're not paying attention.
No, probably not.
Because I think there are several...
Give me an example. I'm a concrete person.
Okay, I'm not a huge fan of the writer right now, but I do give credit where credit's due. I think Jesus at the Center is a modern-day thing.
Oh, yeah. Your Presence is Heaven.
Oh, sure. I mean, you might be able to qualify that. I don't hear that as much.
Lord, You Are Good.
Lord, You Are Good. Possibly. I think Friend of God will end up being a modern-day hymn. I know people have an issue with that song. I don't have much of an issue with that because I listen in context of the writer. I don't believe Israel wrote that to... put it in a, to de-deify God.
Yeah.
It was a humbling aspect of who am I that
you
are mindful of me.
Yeah.
That I get to have a relationship
exactly.
with God. Well, okay, well, anyways, I digress.
So
are
you saying that Israel's going to be in the next Singing to the Lord hymnals?
I mean, it's very possible.
Other
songs like The Great I Am, you know.
Great I Am is really good, There are some...
I think Here I Am to Worship.
Here I Am to Worship was what I was thinking.
Lord, I Lift Your Name on High. Open the Eyes of My Heart. Lord, stuff within the early 2000s.
I'm not... in a way, I give myself away.
I give... Okay.
Okay. I'm going through songs that, you know, are sung a lot.
But I digress. I think there are songs that we're going to sing for years to come.
Oh, yeah.
Part of worship, stuff
well,
like that.
Well, because we have to look... Because it's interesting what classifies as a hymn in the Pentecostal movement.
But the reason I think they're going to stick is the same reasons hymns have stuck is because there's meat on those bones.
They're deep.
It's not shallow lyrics.
Exactly.
And those songs stick around.
It comes from a heart.
Right.
Yeah.
We continue to sing those songs.
And it's interesting you point out Israel because I've always considered him our generation's Andre Crouch.
Ooh.
That's big, big shoes. But I also just classify it because he is like the worship leader at our generation's Billy Graham.
You know, that's a very big thing to say because I don't think our generation really can comprehend who Andre Crouch was to his generation.
Yeah.
And how impacting he was. Not to say that Israel hasn't made an impact. He has. And he'll probably come out of this and still be impacted.
I was going to say...
We've gone on and on and on. We could go on forever about this. But I just wanted to thank you for participating in this episode of To Be Determined.
Well, I'm glad to be on. Thank you.
That was my guest, Brandon Graham. Real nice guy, isn't he? He is an incredible person with an incredible testimony, and that's why he fits in with all of my other guests that I've had so far. I believe this wholeheartedly, that everybody has a story everyone needs to hear, and that is my goal of this podcast, is to spread everyone's testimony. Spread it around. Make a mess. All right, thank my guest, Brandon, and of course, you all for listening in. I cannot do this without you. We have exciting things coming up. I want to thank, of course, Kevin Brzezinski for all of his input and encouragement. And speaking of encouragement, Julia Ranking, who wouldn't be doing this podcast if it wasn't for her encouragement into just getting me going, just started. If anybody out there would like to do something like this, if I can do this, you can do this. It is important. Just go out. Do it. Just get it done. I am excited about next week's guest, or not next week, next episode. I'm sorry, not going to be next week. It is Jim Sliva. I know, you're thinking, again? Well, get used to it. I'm so excited, though. The episode, we had a wonderful conversation about the importance of prayer, and I so enjoy picking his brain on any theological topic. But if you know Brother Sliva, you know he is a man of faith. He is a man of prayer, and we just have a great conversation. He sets us straight on a few things, and you're not gonna wanna miss it. So spread it around. Let people know. Next episode coming up. All right, I think that's it. Until next time, y'all, just keep thinking on the good things. Around the damn.